I don't know where this all started with the criticizing of Mitch Marner, but to me, it's among the most idiotic things that I see done here.
Felt like the first game I wasn't engaged at all in physicalness or play at all.
I have complete faith in Kyle as a general manager, in Sheldon as a coach, and complete confidence in what we're going to do here in Toronto.
Is it possible that you and Brendan and the staff has misread the potential of this group?
No.
Well, I came on this radio station yesterday morning, Ziggy, and I said that I didn't need to hear specifics. I didn't need to hear the plan from point A to point Z to make things better for the Toronto Maple Leafs, to put this team in a better position to take deeper runs into the playoffs. And so I'm actually pretty much okay with what we got from Brendan Shanahan, Kyle Dubas, and Sheldon Keefe yesterday. And we're going to run some of those clips throughout the course of the show. We're going to run some of the player clips. Mitch Marner spoke. Auston Matthews used the term embarrassing. Brendan Shanahan said, look, nobody here is happy, and it's incumbent upon everybody, including the players, to take the next steps, to change certain things. Sometimes it comes from within, to get better. It was a run-of-the-mill, what you'd expect, post-mortem of a really weird season. And I'm not just talking about COVID. I'm talking about a maddeningly inconsistent season from October to early March. Then the break happened, and then out they went in a play-in series. The talking is actually going to be done through action between now and the start of the regular season, whenever that exactly goes down, presumably in December. The clock starts ticking now. Yesterday was the day for words. From here on out, it's the time for action.
I like the way Dubas was kind of questioned on how do you see yourself managing and constructing this roster, and can you make changes, right? I feel like that's the big question moving forward. Everyone has an idea of what he's all about and what he can, how he wants to construct the Leafs, but he is changing. He brought in Clifford. He brought in Muzzin. He's gotten a little bit tougher. I wonder how much, though, is he really going to get away from a skilled team, right? We all talk about, hey, there's a lot of the same kind of player in the Leafs. Are they going to switch it up, bring in a little bit of something else, bring in a little bit of grit, and this team needs to get tougher? So I feel like those are a lot of the questions people are wondering about in the city. And he said he's constantly changing. He hopes he's different a year from now than he is today. I do believe that part of it. I don't mind the way he handled it. It was what we said yesterday morning, right? You're not going to get the answers that we're looking for. We're not going to hear all this stuff calling players out. That's just not going to happen. He's good at doing the interviews now in these press conferences. Sometimes you sit there and you listen, and he gets asked a question, and it's whether it was in the press conference or on Tim and Sid, and he's good at talking for 5 minutes. And you're kind of sitting there saying, well, what really got answered?
Well, that's it. But that's it, right? I mean, it becomes a master class in how you handle the media. Alex Anthopoulos was a popular general manager in this city, and at no time more than the final 2.5, 3 months of his tenure here, after the moves he made to improve the Jays in the middle of the 2015 season. But he's a classic example of someone who said a lot of words without giving you anything on the record. Mark Shapiro, who, by the way, the president and CEO of the Blue Jays, will be our guest at 7:30 this morning, is someone who does the same thing, but in a different way. Ross Atkins as well. Brian Burke, when he was the general manager of the Maple Leafs, sometimes he would use a blunt force object to get his message across, and other times he'd be coy. It's all part of it. But the actions now, the actions are what we're interested in. And I don't know about you, Ziggy. I mean, I'm not sitting here saying this team needs to run away from its skill. What it needs is guys who've got some finish, who bring, for lack of a better term, bring an edge every night. And I'm not talking about crashing people through the boards. I'm not talking about fighting. I'm not some mid-90s Neanderthal who's hung up on the days of old.
You want guys that are tough to play against.
I want to watch. And we're going to have some fun with some clips today. We'll call this entire show Fun with Clips. But I want to sit on my couch. I want to fire through a bag of Doritos and wipe my orange fingers across my shirt. And I want to sit there like a slob and believe that the team I'm watching is completely and totally engaged. There are off nights. There are a handful of nights every year when you're going to get your ass kicked, just like there are a handful of nights every year when you're going to do the ass kicking. But I'm talking about consistent engagement where I don't begin to doubt, because I see it so often, that this team, for long periods of time within a game or for long stretches of time, just isn't engaged enough. And I will accept and take what Wendell Clark said on this program on Tuesday morning at face value. Don't ever question whether guys are trying. Guys are trying. They're in the National Hockey League. They're competitive athletes. Okay. But it's all relative to your peers. It's all relative to your opponents. And there are too many nights where there appear to be too many passengers. And I can't put that on a chart, and I can't put that on a graph. I just know that I sit there with my bag of Doritos, wiping my orange fingers across my chest, and I know what I see. Or I've convinced myself that that's what I see, and I believe it to be true.
You want a little bit more Columbus and Carolina in your guys, correct? You want just a little bit more. I know when we had Wendell on the show, and we kind of posed the question, do guys just not care? Is that what it's about? I understand. I'm with him on guys care. Guys are trying. You just want some more desperation and you want a little bit of competitive edge. For me, when you watch them come back from 3 goals with 4 minutes to 4 minutes to play, and I understand that Werenski's not in the lineup, but when you watch the way they play in those 4 minutes, that's the way you need to play the whole game. And that's when I watch Columbus and when I watch the Carolinas, they play the whole game like they're down 2 goals and the net is empty. That's the way they play. They play the game like they have no goaltender net. And that's what I'd like to see a little bit with this team moving forward. And it's just, you can't just talk about it and do that. It's something you got to work on. You develop it as a team. You develop it from your core. It's part leadership. It's part internal accountability. It just doesn't happen overnight. You don't just say, hey guys, we need to play harder and let's go. It just doesn't happen like that. So that's kind of the stuff that was weighing on me a little bit. Whenever I see the team struggling, that's what kind of sticks out to me. I think the Marner stuff is all kind of interesting how a lot of chatter online and people calling me saying, all right, this is like, how do you sit here, pay a guy $11 million almost, and you get that kind of effort, and then he says he's not engaged? And I say, well, don't take what he says not engaged for just the fact that he doesn't care and he doesn't want to win. Like, that's what you're thinking of. It could just be you don't have it, you're not bringing your best game, and that happens some nights. The not engaged is a tough way to describe your play, because that brings in a lot of different interpretations on what actually is ailing in your game, and it's like you don't want it. So I'd be careful the way you take Marner's comments. I don't know what you thought of
it. Okay, well, let's just play this particular comment. This is Mitch Marner yesterday talking about not being engaged in game one.
I felt like I was getting better throughout every game. Felt like the first game I wasn't engaged at all in physicalness or play at all. And then from that point on, I felt like I got a lot more engaged, a lot more on the puck.
I took it the very same way, Ziggy. Don't interpret that as I wasn't trying. I couldn't get myself going, and I'm sure
that's
you've got.
That's what he should have said.
You probably have prime examples of that throughout the course of your career at any level, and I don't think it matters. I mean, I can go back to I've got long enough memory. I can go back to my house league team when I was 7 or 8 years old and remember a game when I scored a goal and I felt like the puck was going to go in constantly. And then there were other times when I couldn't get my feet underneath me. It doesn't matter what sport it is. And it doesn't matter what you do for a living or if you're a student. Some days you're half asleep in the lecture at university. That was most days for me, which is why my career at university was relatively brief. You would know this.
I was asleep every class.
You did what, 4, 5, 6 years at Queens? Was that what it was?
Or just 1 year?
One year, yeah. It was a postgraduate thing. You 1 year and you got your degree. But it doesn't matter what you do. Some days you're locked in and other days you're not. And so it's hard for me to crap on him for that comment. But here's the thing. Where did it change for Mitch Marner? Well, it changed in the very same place for Mitch Marner that it changed for the other guys. You cannot, in a hard-capped league, separate a player and his performance from his salary. Because if he is not performing to his salary, if he is, quote, not giving you equal than or greater than value for what you're paying him, the ability of the team to be successful is restricted because you can't just make that mistake go away. You can't make that count less against the salary cap and bring other guys in who might be feeling it on a given night or feeling it for a week or two during a crucial series. I mean, that's the issue. In baseball, it may be less true now than 20 years ago, but in baseball, you can make a problem go away if you're a rich franchise and you have to. You can do what the Toronto Blue Jays did with Troy Tulowitzki when it was clearly over. We're going to pay you $50 million or so over the next 3 years to not be here anymore, and it's a sunk cost. But it doesn't count against any kind of cap. There's no penalty for us other than we're paying you money to literally do nothing, or in a worst case scenario, potentially play for another team and play against us and succeed against us. In hockey, you can't get away from it. So Mitch Marner went from entry level deal to one of the highest paid players in the league. And that 90 plus points on an entry level, man, that's great value. That's fantastic. 90 or so points in an 82-game season is the minimum expectation when he's making over almost $11 million. Fair or not?
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. For me, since he signed that big deal, I really do think the money changes a lot of guys, and you have to learn how to play with it. That's the first part.
Do you think that can happen in the second year? Do you think that you get used to it.
For sure.
That you reset.
Look at Nylander. He signed his deal, didn't have the greatest year when he came back for a number of reasons. And then he comes in this year, and I thought he played really well. And he's getting back to the player he was in his entry-level years. I still think he's got another gear to go, a gear and a half to go some nights, but it's there. We've seen his game. Maybe not every night, but and maybe not against Columbus, but it's there this year. Matthews, he wants it, and I think he's fine with his contract. He signed the big one. I don't think there's issues there. The other thing with Marner, though, besides playing with the money, is the pressure he's putting on himself. I think he looks at it like, okay, well, if I had 90 on 900,000, what's 11 million now? Where should I be at now?
Yeah, I don't care about numbers.
Leading the league in scoring now?
But 90-plus points is, I mean, this guy's a I think this guy's a pretty good two-way hockey player. You with me on that?
He is.
So
yeah, and he does things that a lot of the pundits and fans in the city don't see. He pushes offense, and I don't care about the zone entries or exit, not the stats, just it's pushing offense, it's putting pressure on teams. I liked the style of the Leafs when pucks were going forward more, were going up ice, high flips, stretch passes. They used to lay pucks in. I like him skating, going up ice, going north, moving his feet. I thought he was a lot more effective. So this whole puck possession, bring the puck back, let's wait it out, let's look for the good play. I don't like that with Marner's game. So I think a little bit of team tactics and systems. I'd like it to go back to the way it was a couple years ago. But he does a lot of things outside of the points that not a lot of players in the league do.
Kills penalties,
he'll block shots.
He comes back deep into his own end. Sometimes, you know, when I would go to games and I'd sit up in the press box, I mean, it's the most advantageous seat because you can see the whole ice. You see just how committed he is to the defensive zone play at times, and sometimes takes the role of yes, it can, of course. But sometimes he takes the role of the centerman. Comes back down low and supports.
He'll come low, but there's still some lapses in games throughout the year this year where the effort wasn't there at times where he'd let a guy go. Whatever you want to call that. Effort, willingness to come back, pick up a man. I expect so much from Marner. I don't want to see any of those plays from him. I think, you know, he can be one of the best two-way players because of his wheels. And I think he is one of the best at pushing offense. And when it doesn't happen, he's at that point now. Well, what else are you doing for me? Okay, you're killing penalties. Great. But there has to be a little bit more. It has to be, you got to put pressure on defense, have a good forecheck, be tougher to play against. So that's where I see Marner going next. What else can you kind of bring? It's not just the 90 points anymore. We're looking for something else, right? Him, Nylander, and the big four. We're all waiting for something more. I feel like that's what the fans are upset at.
Frederik Andersen. And all of a sudden, he's on the clock. I mean, it's almost hard to keep up sometimes with all the possibilities here. But Frederik Andersen has 1 year left on his deal. Still has not won a playoff series. The Leafs were shut out twice in the five-game series with Columbus. But there were a couple of third-period goals. The Atkinson goal in Game 1 that opened the scoring, broke the scoreless tie, early third period. And then the Liam Foodie goal. 1-0 Columbus becomes 2-0 Columbus on a night when the Leafs, well, they didn't end up scoring at all, but were struggling to score quite obviously up to that point. That was the backbreaker, another iffy goal from Frederik Andersen, who's given up a few of those in third periods of deciding games in Boston. We remember that as well. Frederik's a guy who says a lot in short snippets, And there were times where he was sort of the conscience of the team, the voice of the team, at some low points during the regular season. Here's what he offered up yesterday.
With tighter games, closer games, being comfortable with that, I think it's going to have a great benefit, especially in the playoffs. And I think if we can get used to doing that in the season and not expecting to blow teams out or only really like show up when it's like a really big game in the regular season, I think if we can have it more become an everyday thing and really get used to playing like that, I think that's going to benefit us in the long run.
That is a very sandpapered way of he fired some darts there, Zig.
Like, he fired some very undercover darts.
Not the first time.
So what he's really saying, when he says we need, when he pauses and says guys need to show up in the big games, that's him saying our guys only show up when it's convenient and it's a free-flowing game against an opponent that's not quite the toughest to play against. That is what he is, Freddie Anderson saying when show up in big game, in the big games. That's what he's
saying. You remember after the loss in Philly in November? How pissed off he was after that game? I mean, it's kind of the same thing. He's been on I'll give him credit for being consistent on that front. I mean, he's been on this same theme. And then there's this perception, well, goaltenders are only supposed to, they got to be careful about what they say, and they're a different breed. He's earned the right. And I know I outlined a couple of tough third period goals and a couple of tough third periods in deciding games over the last few years, but Frederik Andersen faces a ton of high scoring chances. And he's coming at it and saying, look, the philosophy of the group has to change.
I don't think it's his fault. None of the losing is his fault. And Brian Burke's on the same side, is with me on this, that he's not to blame for where the Leafs are at. He's not to blame for the playoffs. Yeah, look at his numbers this year. They're not the greatest. But, I mean, it's been a tough year for him in net. I think it could have been a lot worse without him. But at the same time, you got to win. When you're a goaltender, all the numbers are great. But if you can't win on a team, they're going to make changes, right? Berkey talks about a shelf life, and I agree with him. At some point, if they can't win with Andersen, you're going to have to bring somebody else in. It's an unfortunate part of the game, but...
Well, you can't win game 0-0, so they do need to bulge the twine at the other end of the ice. But to your point, Mike, this decision comes soon. And that's just based off of Freddie's contract. The fact that there's only a year left. And then, I mean, he could come back and play lame duck status, but you know that there are going to be questions all year long about that, about his impending free agency if they don't re-up him. I don't mind. I think he's a self-motivated guy. I don't think he's going to moan and gripe. But there will be that uncertainty in the back of his mind if he's playing his free agency year, wondering what's coming next. He's north of 30 years old. He had a save percentage, 0.1% less this year than his career average and than his other seasons in Toronto. I mean, it's a huge year coming up for him in a flat cap system. And playing in a league, I think, where teams are realizing you don't want to overpay one goaltender because you're moving to 65, 35, 60, 40, 55, 45, the way that you apportion out playing time over two guys. Well, if you're paying a guy 7 or 8 and another guy 750, it's clear you got a number one that you want in there 65, 70 games, and that's just not happening anymore. So this is a huge, huge year for Frederik Andersen, not just for the fortunes of the Maple Leafs, if he's still here, but for his potential to earn on his next contract.
What I got from Dubas is, what I got from Dubas yesterday was that they're going to keep him. They're going to move him, and they're not going to re-sign him. They're going to let him just play the year out and go from there. That's kind of what I got from it. Just the way he was, you know, asking, you know, when he was getting asked about Freddie and what he thinks of him and where do they see him, where do they see the club going forward? You're going to have to, I don't think they're going to re-up him and they're not going to trade him. So tough, right? When you're entering your unrestricted free agency year, you still have to play well because everybody's watching you. Look at Barry right now. Teams are watching you. Like, you can't just go and play out the last year like it doesn't mean anything.
And look at Kadri in Colorado. Had a goal last night in their game one win over Arizona. He's got, I think, 13 points in his last 10 games overall. The guy is, I mean, he's not necessarily MacKinnon or Rantanen and Landeskog's up there, but he's a top four forward on a very good hockey team as we sit here right now. And we don't have time in this moment to relitigate that trade, and I don't think that there's any point in doing it. The rationale at the time of the deal was clear. It's just unfortunate that it didn't work out for the Maple Leafs the way that Kyle Dubas intended. The troll poll will go up in the break. After hearing Kyle Dubas speak yesterday, for you, did he make things better, worse, or are things the same? We'll throw the troll poll up on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burrell, at Fan590. Blue Jays president and CEO Mark Shapiro at 7:30. The high-energy tag team of Bourne and Stewie at 8:30 for the weekly hit. Our buddy Tim Leeper will join us from Studio Del Leeper up in Muskoka at 7 o'clock. And Hugh has sat down. We will burl the lead next. Right, the Thursday troll poll is out on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burrell at Fan590. After hearing Kyle Dubas speak yesterday, how do you feel about the future of the Maple Leafs? Better, worse, the same, you're optimistic, or the same, you're pessimistic? 37% the same pessimistic, 27% worse so far. So 64% of respondents. It's very early voting. We cannot declare a winner yet. The CNN election center is not declared a winner, but 64% are leaning toward the not feeling so good side of things.
Just as we expected from Leafs Nation, a very measured, tempered response to yesterday's media availability.
Well, it's time for action, it's time for action.
Enough talk. Action.
At the top of the 8 o'clock hour, we will play or replay a bunch of clips from yesterday. Kyle Dubas, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, Brendan Shanahan, Freddie Anderson, and we'll play a game called Are You Buying It? So we'll offer up interpretations of what the guys had to say, our own interpretations, and Are We Buying It? Tim Leeper, Mark Shapiro next hour. We'll give away Untucket gift cards in just a little bit. Be listening for your cue to call. Other stuff is happening.
A lot of other stuff is happening.
A lot of other stuff is happening. We've dealt with the lead. Let's burl the rest. It's burl the lead time with you.
Good morning, boys. Well, Hurricanes coach Rod Brind'Amour a little bit lighter in the wallet today after comments after his team's 4-3 loss to the Bruins yesterday in overtime. Brind'Amour called the league a joke. A joke! And said the game was a crime scene. He was referring to the Bruins' 2-1 goal in the second period. There was a goalmouth scramble. The puck popped up in the air, looked like it was knocked down by a Boston player with a hand, you know, hand pass. Kane's goaltender, Peter Mrazek, covered the puck briefly with his glove. It squirted loose and was banged home by Charlie Coyle. Brind'Amour challenged, saying it was indeed a hand pass, and after a lengthy review, this was the call.
After reviewing the play, there was control and possession by the goaltender, therefore nullifying the hand pass. Carolina's charged Mitch Marner a penalty for delay of game.
So not only does the goal count, he gets a penalty. In addition to the $25,000 fine, there's another $25,000 fine hanging over his head like the sword of Damocles in case he does something similar in the future. That was either a hand pass or Mrazek had it covered and it should, the whistle should have gone. That's the way I saw it.
It was both of it, Hugh.
Exactly. Take your pick.
It's a clearly, when you can't put up, you can't direct a puck towards the goal and for the play to continue. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they're saying that he didn't have possession, or that he had possession and he lost it. Like, either way, if he had possession of it, you should. It's a dead play. Do you guys understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, the puck. So that what they're saying is that if he doesn't have the puck or he lost it, then it's a dead play because it was a hand pass.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
It's clearly not one or the other.
Well, but I think the issue, my understanding is the issue is that Rod Brind'Amour didn't challenge the right thing.
I don't think he can challenge, though. There was an issue. I looked this up after the game. You can't challenge a goaltender whether your goaltender has possession or not.
Okay, well,
that's what I think it is.
But here's the thing. He challenged an item that happened on that play, the hand pass. Whether or not Peter Mrazek smothering the puck temporarily negates the hand pass, the league and the NFL is also guilty of this madness with its replay system and all of that. But the league, the officials should be able to look at the totality of the play and based off of that, make the decision about goal or no goal. Like, why does it have to be, well, you didn't challenge, you're not allowed to challenge possession.
It's not a court of law.
Like, look at the play and get the call right.
Yep.
In fact, maybe we should just eliminate all of it and just say, I'm challenging this particular play.
That's what it should be.
Watch the previous 10 seconds of the footage and tell me if it was offside or not, and therefore the goal is a goal or not, or in this case, if there was a hand pass, or if my goalie had the puck smothered and it was knocked out from underneath his glove and therefore he was interfered with. Just look at the last 10 seconds and tell me if the play's legit or not. And if it's not, overturn your call. It's not hard.
That's way too simple. That's why they'll never adopt it. Flyers beat the Habs last night 2-1. Carey Price stopped 29 shots. He also made a brilliant paddle save. Habs showed they can play with the Flyers. Carter Hart made 27 stops for Philly. 2-1 Philadelphia. This looks like it's going to be a series.
The Philadelphia...
Thought the goaltenders...
Yeah, I was just going to say...
Ziggy, thought the goaltenders were great.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Flyers... Going back to when they chose John Van Beesbrook over Curtis Joseph in the summer of 1998, the Philadelphia Flyers have been chasing a goaltender. And Ziggy, it looks like they have one.
He's good. The kid can play.
Yeah.
And the best part is that Carey Price is his idol. So, I mean, that's got to be awesome for you when you get in a game against someone you kind of grew up idolizing. And then you come and bring your best. I thought Hart was excellent. And by the looks of it, he's going to have to be really good for them to beat the Canadiens. I can't believe I'm actually saying that, but the Canadiens are legit.
Yep.
Price was great as well. How about the stop he made with his paddle coming out?
That was ridiculous.
Saved Suzuki's life. Yep. I mean, that was not too often do players jump in net kind of and turn their head. You know you're getting a slapper right off the forehead.
Well, this is going to be a good series because the Habs have to play at 100% all the time because they're not very good offensively, but they are very quick. They won't be outworked.
They generate chances. They just don't often finish. Yeah. I mean, that's the name of the game.
Suzuki hit the crossbar. Yeah. Yeah. He hit the crossbar there.
Good series.
They had chances to tie it, and they played well enough to win.
And Canucks beat the Blues 5-2. Bo Horvat, a pair of goals for the Canucks.
I have to admit something here.
What's that?
And I might have to go home after I admit this. Like, I might have to leave.
Okay.
I don't hate the Vancouver Canucks right now.
Uh-oh. Why don't you just say that you love
the Habs? And I know that Kevin Bieksa is not up and listening right now, so I feel safer about saying this. I was not a big fan of those Canucks teams in the early 2010s. I cheered for Boston in the 2011 Stanley Cup Final, and I'm sitting here right now hating the Boston Bruins, but not hating the Vancouver Canucks. It's an alternate universe.
Yeah. The bodies are starting to fall in Pittsburgh. The club firing three assistant coaches yesterday. Sergei Gonchar, Jacques Martin, and Mark Recchi. Head coach Mike Sullivan stays. Seems like GM Jim Rutherford sending a bit of a message here.
Absolutely. That's the first sign. If you're a player and all of a sudden the assistant coaches go, that's your general manager trying to mix up what's going on in the room.
That's what the Leafs did a couple of years ago. Remember, they fired their assistants and left Babcock in charge. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's the one message you can send guys without going and getting rid of guys right now. It's everything's kind of up in the air with the salary cap, right? I don't think GMs really know what to do or where to go at this point. They're going to kind of wait till the offseason and go from there. But it's one of those things where you get rid of your assistant coaches and you're hoping to bring in other guys to kind of mix it up and create a little bit of spark in the room and on your team. That's that's why he did it. Those are great assistant coaches. I played with Gonchar, played against Recchi. And Martin's has shown to be a great coach in the league. So it's I don't really think those guys deserve to lose their job from what I saw out of the Penguins, but that's the business we choose, and that's kind of what happens when you don't win.
Yeah, more changes on the way, too, I'm sure. Jays hit 7 home runs. They lose 14-11 to the Marlins. They fought back from 8-0 down and 11-4 down. Franchise record, 6 straight innings with a home run. Nate Pearson, not a good night. 2 1/3, 7 runs. He only struck out one guy. Bo Bichette, though, wow. 5 for 5 with a walk, first shortstop in the modern era to reach base 6 times with a home run and 2 stolen bases. The Jays, by the way, the first team to have 18 hits and 7 home runs and lose. They're off today. President Mark Shapiro joins leadoff at 7:30.
I think just the 4th time in Major League history a team hit 7 home runs in a game and lost. As you said, Hugh, first to get 18 hits and 7 home runs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. And it was 8-0 and 11-4. Some of the fundamental stuff, the base running, defense at times, they got some stuff they got to brush up on. And I know there's a lot of forgiveness for this weird season and everything got interrupted. You didn't really have a spring training. They're a young, young team. But they're looking like they didn't get a good spring in because they didn't.
3 errors last night, like you mentioned. Well, I mean, they're not expected to win the World Series this year, so maybe you treat this as a 60-game spring training.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, okay.
All right. I put money on
Raptors. Nick Nurse handed the head coaching reins to assistant Adrian Griffin last night. He did a great job, too. Raptors beat the Sixers 125-121 to go to 6-1 in the bubble. And we'll wrap up with this. Haven't heard from Jerry Jones in a while. And I know we've missed him. On the same day that the state of Texas witnessed a record 324 deaths from COVID-19, the Dallas Cowboys owner said it's full steam ahead for the boys.
We've got some adjustments to make. We're going to make them with enthusiasm, and we're going to make them with can-do. The Dallas Cowboys plan on playing all of our football games, and we plan on playing it in front of our fans.
How about them Cowboys?
Oh, can-do.
Yeah.
We're just going to solve it with can-do. Can I buy that in a bag, or does come in a
can? No, you get it in a can.
Where does can do
come? See, it's aerosol, so it'll damage the ozone, but okay. You can buy it in a can.
So the Cowboys...
I just want to know where I can get the can do from.
So Jerry Jones wants fans at the Cowboys games this year. Yesterday, the Washington Football Club announced it will play the season with no fans at FedEx Field.
So,
and we haven't been able to say this very often lately.
What's the
difference? Washington Football Club is doing the right thing. That might be the
Washington Football Club hasn't played in front of fans in years, Hugh.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
Okay, like half full?
Yeah, but half full. But so Jerry Jones wants fans, and Texas is a hot spot for this right now.
Did you see Washington last week created the brand new hashtag? #1932, which I guess is the year that the team came into being.
Okay.
But on Twitter, you can't hashtag numbers.
Oh, geez.
So it lasted like an hour before they realized,
that's the most Washington.
Our hashtag doesn't work.
It's the most Washington Football Club thing ever.
Oh,
Jerry Jones.
I'm going to have some can do.
Yep. It's on sale, apparently. Can do's on sale this week.
Getting down to the local Costco or the Walmart for a little can-do.
Buy
it in bulk, baby.
Big case of
store it, up. Man. The apocalypse might be coming right next to your canned tuna. A little can-do and canned tuna. You're good to go. Can't get killed that way with some can-do.
Nope.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour, we'll reset the Maple Leafs from yesterday. Kyle Dubas, Mitch Marner, Austin Matthews, Brendan Shanahan, Freddie Anderson among those to speak. Are you buying it? We will play a game called Are You Buying It? Replay some of those clips, and Ziggy and I will answer the Are You Buying It question. Our Thursday leadoff troll poll is up on Twitter at Scotty Mac Thinks, at Mike Zigamanis, at Hugh W. Burl, at Fan 590. After hearing Kyle Dubas speak yesterday, how do you feel about the future of the Maple Leafs? Better, worse, the same because you're optimistic, or the same because you're pessimistic? And so far, early voting, 150 votes, 65% are either worse or the same pessimistic. So feeling negative about where things are at. Tim Leeper and Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro next hour. The phone lines are open right now, 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. We've got Untuckit gift cards to give away, and if you want to be the contestant to play All or Nothing and potentially receive those gift cards, dial up now. Oh, I got $100 in Untuckit gift cards to give away today. And we will attempt to do that by playing All or Nothing, three true or false questions. The name of the game is All, so get them all right, or nothing. Get all three of them not right. Either way, you win. So if you get question number one wrong, you're not out. You've just got to get the next two intentionally incorrect. You got to make sure that Ziggy is on the line here, because we're going to Scarborough for our contestant. I just want to make sure that this isn't Ziggy dialing in.
East side.
David in Scarborough. David in Scarborough. Where in Scarborough, David?
Cliffside.
Cliffside?
Hello. Cliffside.
There you go.
So like, okay. Scarborough.
Nice, nice. Well, I'm north side, so but nice. we're all one.
I'm just getting a sense that Ziggy might have turned on you there, David, but I'm still wishing Hugh and I are still wishing you well. Question number one, Ziggy, fire away.
All right. One of the Leafs used the word embarrassing when asked about another early playoff exit. That player is number 34, Austin Matthews. True or false?
True.
That is correct. That was one of the more harsher words used yesterday.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. Okay, David, you're in good shape here. You got to get the next two right, and the gift cards are yours.
Perfect.
David, can I call you Dave?
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, man. I'm going to call you Dave. Dave, a coach is $25,000 lighter in the wallet after ripping the referees following a game one loss. That coach is John Tortorella. Is that true or is that false?
That's false.
It is. In fact, it was Rod Brind'Amour who got fined because he said the league's a joke. And that one is a crime scene referring to an obvious hand pass that was not called a hand pass yesterday.
All right, David. Are you an old school wrestling fan?
Oh, I'm a diehard wrestling fan.
Oh, excellent.
Oh,
good.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. All right, I feel good about this then. All right, so this is old school wrestling for the win. Later in the show, we have Justin Bourne and Anthony Stewart join us. They're always with us at 8:30 on a Thursday morning. They are otherwise known on this show as High Energy. Now, the original WWF tag team that was called High Energy in the early 1990s comprised the late, great Owen Hart and the Birdman, Coco Beware. True or false?
That is true.
Good man. Yes. Die Hard Wrestling Man. Love it. Oh, David, I'm so happy to find someone who's as big a loser as me.
you love your wrestling, don't you?
Especially the old school stuff. Yeah, I don't really watch it much anymore. And that's not because I've matured. It's because I just...
Yeah, I don't have the time.
No, it's just doesn't...
It's not as good.
Not as good as it used to be. It's not... I'm an Attitude Era guy, and before that, right? The late 90s, Stone Cold and...
Yeah, that's kind of why...
The Rock, Undertaker.
Yeah, Stone Cold, The Rock, those guys for sure. Love it.
A little bit later on in the show, I need to share about a fridge incident.
Oh.
I tweeted about it. I don't know if you saw this. I tweeted about it. I made sliders last night.
Yeah.
And I reached into the compartment along the fridge door for the mustard.
Yep.
And I encountered an expiry date.
Uh-oh.
Of November. Guess.
2019?
2012.
What?
20.
That mustard 12. Had been in your fridge for 8 years.
And I moved.
And he still put it on the sliders.
I transported the mustard from.
And he still used it. That's the worst part of that story.
The best part?
How are your guts you this morning?
You?
The you best part. I didn't use it, Ziggy, but you know what I did? This is such. I put it back in the fridge. Oh.
That's what guys it's an do. Antique now. You can't get rid of it.
I mean, it's going in the museum.
Oh,
yeah.
The history
for sure.
of Scotty.
Now it's a contest just to see how long you can keep it.
I'm going
to
be buried with it. What
2012.
Is the. Text us to 59590. Oh. The longest serving member inside your fridge. Give us some of the crazy stuff you've encountered. Tim Leeper joins us on the other side. Uh-oh. The texts are starting to fly in after the mustard incident last night. It's the longest, active member inside your fridge. Who is the veteran of the fridge wars in your home? That bottle of salad dressing that has snuck all the way back. And you just haven't seen it in years. This after I, Ziggy, went for some mustard because I made sliders last night. Appropriate that Tim Leeper's going to join us in a minute, too. Sliders, baseball, huh? No? Okay. It's too early in the morning for that stupidity. But I made sliders last night, and I had some ketchup. And I can go through ketchup like a regular person. I like ketchup on a lot of things. Mustard, I'm a fan of, but I reached in and I realized I had two bottles, and the first one I looked at, it expired in January of this year, January of 2020. So I'm like, okay, well, then I'll move on to the second bottle. Because I don't think mustard 8 months out is that bad, but if I've got a fresher bottle, I'm going to go for that one. You know, one that hasn't hit its expiry date yet. I turn the thing over, I look in the bottom, November 29th, 2012. And I moved last year. This mustard made the move with me. And I put it in the fridge, obviously, without looking at the expiry date.
Is it expensive? Is it like Dijon mustard or like the honey? Is it the honey brown stone ground mustard? Like what kind of mustard is it?
It is the bright dandelion colored yellow mustard.
The cheap stuff.
The best stuff. I don't care what it costs. If the best stuff is the cheap stuff, dude, I'm Scottish. I'm good with it. It's the best stuff. It's the bright yellow mustard. I have 8 year old mustard in my fridge right now, and the best is that I put it back in the fridge instead of throwing it out right away. I'll throw it out with the next garbage day, but I haven't hit that yet.
I can't get upset with you or make fun of you because I've used expired condiments before. Mustard and ketchup, respectively. Do you not just shake it a little bit more and hopefully it's not too bad?
I mean, how can you tell if mustard's bad? If there's big yellow clumps in your mustard, I mean, well, mustard's yellow. I mean, yellow is the color of things that go bad sometimes. So how can you tell?
Yeah. I usually just shake it a little bit more and hope for the best.
Well, maybe I'll give that a try. The science experiment. Let's see here. Corey and Keswick, barbecue sauce expired 07-09. I'm not sure how to interpret those numbers, but in no way can it be good. It's either July of 2009. It's either July of 09 or September of 07. Either way, it's not good. Tim Leeper, former Blue Jays first base and outfield coach, is with us. Mark Shapiro, the Blue Jays president and CEO, coming up in about 20 minutes at 7:30. Leap, you got any...
Disturbed. I'm very disturbed right now. This is not the way I want to wake up.
You got any expired stuff in Casa del Leap's fridge in Muskoka?
I'm paranoid. Like, if it's a couple days before expiry, like, it's probably out of there. The mustard, the fact it made the move with you is even
it's
more
just
unbelievable.
Pathetic.
Yeah, that makes it way worse, I think. Like, the fact that he actually packed it up. Like, who doesn't look at the expiry dates on the stuff when they move their fridge when they're moving?
Scott MacArthur, who.
I'm a busy guy. I'm not looking at all the expiry dates. There's just no chance.
Next time you offer me a glass of milk when I come over, I'm definitely not having it.
I just want to break that sentence down for a minute. The next time you come over, okay, that makes sense.
What are you more alarmed at, the milk or the fact that I'm actually have to get an invite over to your place?
No. I mean, once we get past COVID, we'll do our NFL Sundays like we did last fall and all that stuff. It's the inviting you over part isn't weird. It's that you think I would offer you a glass of milk when you get there.
unless we're
making White Russians, like. Hey, Ziggy, welcome to my house. Do you want some milk? Like, what? Who are you, Santa Claus? What is this, Christmas Eve? Like, oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Leap, it's always good to hear your voice, pal. Do you have an interpretation of what you heard? I mean, you've been inside, like Ziggy, different sport, baseball, but you've been inside locker rooms, clubhouses, and the troll poll on Twitter is this: after hearing Kyle Dubas speak yesterday, how do you feel about the future of the Leafs? Better, worse, the same, optimistic, or the same, pessimistic? Only 5% of more than 250 respondents in 30 minutes are saying better. And if you combine worse with pessimistic, that accounts for almost 70% of our total votes.
Interesting. My take on it was that they dug in a little bit, and which was really great. I honestly liked what he said about Marner. I actually thought, you know, that was good and probably what he needed to hear then. And if he is definitely going to be here, which it sounds like he's going to be, like that was a good move. My biggest question in this, and again, when you're in the room, it's one thing, and it's your team, it's different, and you're outside the room, it's a whole different thing. But the knowns of what we do know is the thing that scares me. The fact that they got knocked out 4 years in a row in the first round and like three pretty much with this core. And that's the part you know. So like to kind of maybe go into the next year with the same group, is it a little bit of insanity? Yeah, for me a little bit. But at the same time, they felt pretty good in terms of like having a full head. They went back to the having your own training camp, you know, doing things during the regular season. You know, for me too, and I don't understand this, like in hockey, and Ziggy can speak to this obviously a lot more than I can. I always think the biggest thing is that you're playing great going into the tournament, as opposed to like, I think the regular season is so long and there's so many games that are just kind of for whatever reason. But like, how important is it just to be playing good going into the playoffs, as opposed to like, you know, winning your division and doing everything like that?
Yeah. I mean, the regular season, and me and Scotty have talked about this. If I don't think it's the regular season the Leafs wanted. It was a tough start. You had a coaching change. There were spots of the year where they didn't play close to what we expected. And then it's like we want them to all of a sudden take 4 months off and then turn it on. How difficult. I still think this is hard for professional athletes in general, all the sports across the board. How difficult is it, even for, I know the baseball guys were starting their season, a little bit different situation than basketball and hockey, but it's got to be hard just turning it on all of a sudden. I know everyone had a couple weeks of training camp, but
this is, it's such a strange time for pro sports. Maybe you can kind of add on. I think it's, you know, how difficult it is on players to just all of a sudden
but maybe,
Ziggy, bring their best.
But maybe it just reinforces that you are what you are. You don't.
Well,
you're not,
that's what I brought up. I said it's going to expose the teams that are good, and it's going to expose, you know, it's going to expose right. The good and bad teams.
Because you're not maybe a middle of the road team that happens to go into the playoffs on a 7-game winning streak, feeling good about yourself, and you were a first, or maybe you're not a first overall team that's been home and cooled off for the last 2 months and really hasn't played or had to play with any of that subconscious intensity. And arguably that's what we saw from the Tampa Bay Lightning last year. I don't mind the defiance either, Leap, but here's the deal. Like, this team is what it is, and I just don't think we can sit here and say that a team that was bottom 10 in goals against in the regular season should have a reasonable expectation of being a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. Like, this group is what it is.
And going back to that, like, it's a level playing field for everybody here. And so, you know, teams are going to make the best of that, what it is. And again, going back to the knowns, like, if you know that about this team, that's crazy. I mean, you actually know what's going to happen. It seems like if everything kind of stays the same. I think on the other side of this, too, that we're missing, it's easy for me and it's easy for everybody to say, hey, well, we just got to make a trade. You got to make a trade. But, like, you're going to have to trade someone really, really good who's going to go somewhere and perform really well, and you're going to have to get some return. And, like, those trades just don't grow on trees. Very easy. I mean, when we were at the Jays, it was easy to say, hey, just trade this guy. If once we trade Stroman, or if we trade Happ, like, we're going to get this and we're going to be great. Like, it doesn't necessarily always work that way.
This is the thing, Leap, too, and Ziggy, jump in on this. The Leafs have to be very careful. Now, Brian Burke was on this show yesterday and said, hey, look, you could trade William Nylander for an emerging young defenseman. And he used a Seth Jones example, saying when Seth Jones was traded to Columbus by Nashville, he wasn't the player he is now. So maybe you can get a young emerging defenseman, and you have to count on that defenseman continuing to improve as he comes into his own, gets a little older, gains that experience. What the Leafs can't do, and yet what feels like maybe necessary, is they got to trade money out for cap space. It's almost as if cap space has become a human being right now. Well, they had to trade a first-round draft pick, an eventual human being, for cap space last summer to get out from underneath the Patrick Marleau contract.
Which they turned into a 13th overall pick.
In a pretty deep draft, by all accounts. They can't do that again. They can't say, and I don't think Kyle Dubas is going to do this, but there are opinions out there that suggest, well, maybe you just need to trade William Nylander to get a $6.9 million off the books so that you can spend that in other areas. No, you can't trade money out the door for the sake of reacquiring that money or adding it to your kitty so that you can go disperse it. You're not going to get better that way in the immediate. I just don't see how that makes sense. And if you are starting to trade really good players for the sake of having additional cap space, you're starting to chase it. You're the cat chasing the mouse.
There's a whole other layer for a general manager. When you keep making moves and they don't turn out well, and majority of trades don't work out well, that goes on your record. We all thought the Kadri-Barry-Kerfoot move was great. If you ask most people, they would have said at the time, yes, I like the move. Everyone's coming now, and a lot of the pundits are saying, no, that was a terrible move. How could they have made it? Yeah, that's easy to say that now. When you keep making moves like this that don't work out, they go on your resume, and I think that's very difficult for general managers. You're better off rolling the dice with your high draft picks, and you either let them play or you let them walk at some point. But when you go out and you're aggressive with your moves, that's when, and they don't work out, that's when you get in trouble as a general manager. So say he trades an Nylander or Marner, and you bring in some high defenseman or some hot prospect, and it doesn't work out, that's when management, that's when you get into trouble. And I think you have to be concerned about that, because guys don't want to lose their job over some trade that they're trying to make, or some, you know, you're trying to change the roster. I just, you're not going to, what GM is going to sacrifice their career on a whim? You're not going to do that.
And here's the case. When you're trading the best player in the deal, you're always going to be the one with that scenario. And it's never good for the team that's trading the best player. And whoever they trade with, they're going to be trading. If they trade one of those guys, one of their core four, like, that's going to be the best player in the deal no matter what. I said, but the other deal is, if you stay the same and then you get ousted again next year in the first round of the playoffs, like what then? I mean, that's also going to be a tough sell.
Well, yeah. The window, Ziggy, doesn't necessarily slam shut in the NHL because guys get old, although that can be a factor. Looking at Pittsburgh and Chicago's rebuilding right now, but at least Pittsburgh can look at it and say, well, we got three cups out of the deal. I mean, that's inarguable, the success that they've had. But sometimes the window closes because your cap situation becomes restrictive. Now, Kyle Dubas insists they're not up against the cap, and I think that there is some factual truth to that. Like, if Cody Ceci doesn't come back, and Tyson Barrie, who was about a $3 million cap hit for the Maple Leafs because Colorado kept half of his salary this past season. I mean, there's going to be money that is freed up, but they don't have... I think we did the math right around the time that COVID shut everything down in March. If you factor in current salaries and estimated raises for restricted free agents like Mikheyev, using him as an example, a couple others, you're up in the $71, $72 million range, and the cap is flat, which we didn't know back in March. It's $81.5 million bucks. So if you're playing with $8-9 million, and you want to go and get a top dog on that back end, well, that's going to take up most of what's left, right? So I understand that Kyle Dubas doesn't believe his team is right up against the cap, but it won't take long. It won't take long for them to get there.
Yeah, I just think I just think it's still early. I know how hard and how frustrating that take is. I just think it's still early. Guys are still early 20s. It's going to take time. The only thing that gets me a little upset is that it's how they're losing. I don't care if a team goes out, plays a certain style. It's just how it's done. It's giving up the leads. You heard Freddie Anderson talk, and we're going to discuss that clip again later, but they have to learn how to play better in those tough, tight games. You have to want to show up when it's not comfortable. And that's the big thing with it. Not just the Leafs. There's a number of teams out there that struggle with this. You know, it's not just the Leafs. So
I like that they're saying that, but is this a situation where you got all guys? Listen, nobody goes out there and tries to lose. Nobody goes out there and doesn't try to do their best. But in terms of having players and having the skill set to do that, to be that team that says we got to get tougher in these tough times, is it just a chance that they just don't have that personnel? These aren't the type of guys, even though each player is great in his own right, given them all together, are they a team that can change the way they play and be that team that goes deep in the playoffs?
Well, that's what when you're putting the team together, you got to figure out who are your guys that you rely on every night, who are your game changers, who, you know, your A group. Then you got to figure out your supporting cast and your B group. And what a lot of general managers get wrong are figuring out which players are what, right? I feel like there are players that are put in the wrong positions when they're either... The biggest mistake I think teams make is when you have a B player, a supporting guy, and you have him in a leading role. And it's not a knock against the players. Some guys just don't fit that role well for whatever reasons. You know, your go-to guy that you need a big goal at a certain time, that's just not them. It happens on a lot of teams. So you got to figure out which players, you know, you got to put them in the right role. And I think that ails a lot of general managers in the league.
Leap, you got away with a segment here where you didn't even have to talk baseball.
Thank God. It's great.
I actually have one baseball question. Man. I have one. Yes. What exactly happened on the sack bunt yesterday? How do you let that go with no one touching the ball? I'm
top
sorry,
of the tenth,
but
top of the 10th inning, Lee.
I was shocked by the comment that it was Drury's fault. That ball was bunted to me. I thought it was like directly at shortstop. So in that play, you have the first baseman coming across, being very aggressive, covering kind of the middle of the field. And if he's coming across, he can get that out over at third base. The pitcher, he's got to throw it and he's got to break the third base. And if you looked at where he went straight in. If not, he actually fell over to first base a little bit. And even though you can say, yeah, Drury should have come over and gotten that ball, but that ball was pretty hard right at shortstop. But if the pitcher comes off the third base, that ball's right to him, and he gets the guy. That was just my take on it when I saw it. I was surprised.
Is that players or coaching?
That's player. I mean, we run bunt plays all spring training, and you do it all the time. And every bunt play scenario like that, the pitcher's responsibility is the third base bag or the third baseline. The third baseman has to read the pitcher and determine whether or not he goes after that ball. But to me, where that ball was hit, it was so much at shortstop. And if you're visually, you're the third baseman coming in and you look at the angle of that bunt, I think you just say there's no way in the world that I'm going to get that ball, because usually the decisions you make are balls that are bunted a little bit more towards the line. I thought that ball was bunted so far up the middle that if I'm Chris Drury, that I look at it, and Brandon Drury, if I just look at it, I'm like, man, this is not a ball you normally go after. It's just something you never see, because usually the pitcher has that ball.
Well, Leap, and it's not specific to the bunt play. It's just that the Blue Jays look to me like a very young team that are 5 months removed from spring training with not a lot of baseball in between. And I don't think I'm making an excuse. I feel like I'm speaking factually. I mean, there have been youthful base running errors. There have been mistakes defensively. There was the bunt play last night. I mean, this is obviously a young and still flawed team, and they're not there yet, but they look like they haven't had a lot of baseball under their belts of late.
But I will say this, it's a level playing field. Everybody's in the same boat. Base running's been terrible all throughout the league. If you watch the Dodgers early playing the Giants, I mean, they've ran themselves out of like two or three games. But I think, yeah, your point is well taken. But also, I mean, you've got to be really careful of setting the bar too low. I mean, the players don't want to hear, hey, we're trying, we're close, we're playing these good teams. They know they can win. They think they can win. And I think that's the wrong message to send these guys. Like, you just got to send the message that, like, hey, this is the big leagues. And, like, look at, we play in the minor leagues. You know you're not supposed to make the first. You play Little League. You're not supposed to make the first out of third base. You're not supposed to do these things. And these are just fundamental things in baseball that you know, but really be careful about setting the bar too low, because the Marlins, they have 18 players turnover, you know, and even though they're not very good, you know, they're not maybe playing, you know, really stupid baseball either. So again, it's a 60 game season. Nobody's at their top, and then the lineups are changing every day, and your roster moves are all over the place. Like, I just got a caution about my biggest fear is just setting the bar too low, and you know, expect a lot from guys, because you know when you expect a lot from guys will answer the bell. If you set your expectations low, you're going to meet them every time, and that's what I fear with this group right now.
Go check your fridge for rotten mail.
I'm going to go look at everything right now. No. I know there's not a beer can closer to an expiry date, that's for sure.
No, you're always way, way ahead. Way, way ahead on that. Tim Leeper will rejoin us next week on Leadoff. The Blue Jays president and CEO, Mark Shapiro, will join us next. Blue Jays have an off day after splitting their two games in Buffalo with the Miami Marlins. And we are pleased to be joined right now by somebody who has been very busy over the last 5 or 6 months in ways that he probably didn't expect. The president and CEO of the Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, is with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
we're hanging in. I mean, we're glad to have sports back and actual games to talk about, Mark. I mean, if I were to ask you the broad question, what have the last 5 or 6 months been like? And I guess more specifically, the last few weeks and the lead up to organizing Buffalo after Pittsburgh fell through. What would you say in response to that question?
I think it's been certainly unlike anything I've ever expected or experienced. I think just the level of uncertainty. I think one of the things, though, Scotty, it's been a reminder is just that everyone in the world's kind of going through some, you know, fashion of what we experienced and we went through. So we certainly weren't alone and didn't want to, you know, over-dramatize what we were going through. But at a certain point, just the level of the unknowns, the level of waking up each day uncertain as to what, you know, conditions outside of our control were going to kind of dictate the next 24 hours, pivoting, you know, spending so much energy and time on different efforts that would just evaporate. I think that it was just committing to doing the best thing possible for our team and players. And then really more than anything, being so proud of our team on and off the field, not making excuses, 21 straight days on the road, 4 days of doing nothing while we waited for to figure out what was going on with the Phillies, not knowing what our home or where our home would be, what it would look like, yet never hearing complaints, never hearing the victim mentality, just focusing on what they control. I just really believe that it's going to pay dividends in the core, you know, of our players as they move forward. It's going to be part of our story, part of who we are, and part of a championship foundation in the years ahead.
Yeah. How do you guys pack? Like, what do the players do when you know, well, you don't know where you're going? I'm sure some guys just bring a carry-on and you got other guys, what, packing 5-6 suitcases? How's anything funny with what guys have brought with them or... Some
well,
guys
I haven't
probably
been monitoring what our guys are packing. I'm among my responsibilities. I'm going to trust that they're grown men and they figure out how to handle those kinds of things. If I'm starting to focus on the, if I'm inspecting the suitcases, we're all in big trouble. But, no, listen, those are the little things. You're right. Like, we don't think about those things, and none of them are easy. There's a host of it's really, you know, you never want to feel sorry for professional athletes, but the life that they were living for 21 straight days on the road, from our inability to kind of get them anything other than a boxed meal to the fact that they are completely isolated in their hotel rooms. The only times they're not isolated are when they're at the stadium or at the ballpark they're playing at, and that's not their ballpark, cut off from the people that they love and care about and their teammates. It's just it's been very different. And for people who thrive on routine, or who thrive on, you know, a life for year after year after year is kind of the same, to have that be so foreign and still expect to perform. Granted, everybody else is going through the same thing, but because we were the only team completely on the road, you know, it's been, put it this way, it's been very welcome to get two games that, you know, is not really our home, but our home away from home this year, and we're going to certainly work to make it that way.
With the president and CEO of the Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Mark, you've got the alternate training site in Rochester, so some of your minor leaguers are going through their paces there. Baseball activities in a year where there are no minor leagues. Can you give us an update on how guys are doing, kind of what they're doing well there? And then alternatively, for the guys who are not part of the alternate training site, maybe some of the lower level guys who you do have hopes for, how is the organization watching over them and ensuring that they're continuing to progress as best they can in this weird time?
Yeah, the second one's a real challenge. The first one, the group of players that we've got at Rochester, you know, on our taxi squad, there's obviously different populations there. There's guys who are more major league depth type guys, like a Ruben Tejada, a veteran guy who's got multiple years of major league experience, Justin Miller, guys like that, you know, who provide us major league depth. And then there's guys like Austin Martin, Jordan Groshans, I think you're referring to, and numerous other guys like that, that we're taking advantage of the only opportunity that exists right now. And I say that the only sanctioned formal opportunity that exists for development. So what they're doing there is ensuring that the depth players are prepared, but also trying to be creative in both the way we're doing that and ensure that we have development opportunities for the players there, that this is really our only chance to work developmentally this year. To do that, the best way to do that is to approach each player individually, not to take each 30 players as a group, but to think about them all individually and still create opportunities to kind of ensure that each player is getting the most out of the time over there. And it's been great. Ken Huckabee, who was going to be our AAA manager, has kind of led our efforts over there. We've got front office staff there. Our player development staff is monitoring and staying on top of it. For the other players that, you know, we don't have anything for, I think we still have hope that sometime this fall we'll get approval to move forward with some sort of instructional program, and that will be conducted at, you know, a incredibly new renovated facility down in Dunedin that'll open sometime in late October or mid-October. So we still hope that'll happen, but no, listen, again, it's a lost year of development. We have stayed in close contact, been creative in what we can do, but the players are largely left to be accountable for their own development. And, you know, due to the virus, you know, the places they can do that are limited as well. So again, the one thing I'd say is every team's going through the same thing, but we're trying to be creative in how we're approaching that.
What's the contingency plan if something like COVID runs through the team? I know it's not something you guys, you know, nothing anybody really plans for, but after seeing what's happened around the league, is there any kind of plan or idea what you guys or what GMs or presidents in general would do with their respective teams?
Well, I think what we've tried to do is learn from the experiences of the Cardinals and the Marlins and others, and that is largely, you know, be extremely diligent in the measures that would prevent that from happening, understand mm-hmm. where the breakdowns have happened with other teams and benefit from, you know, their experiences and their challenges, but also ensure that we are extremely diligent about contact tracing and understand who comes in contact with each player so that if we do experience anything, we could cut it off and head it off before it's got community spread and impacts a broader number of players. You know, I think we're doing the best we possibly can under our operating parameters to mitigate that risk. But certainly still, you know, we're still in contact with some people outside of our modified bubble. So the risk certainly still exists. I feel good that our guys have been very compliant, taking it very seriously, understand the stakes for themselves, for the organization, and for the broader community. It started here at a different level than every single other team, because what they had to do and what they had to agree to do to have our training at Rogers Center was different from every other team. So they've held themselves to higher standards, and I think that that's going to bode well for the rest of the season for us.
With Mark Shapiro, the president and CEO of the Blue Jays, on the field, Mark, I'll hone in on Vladdy Jr. for a second. I mean, there's no arguing the exit velocity of a lot of his contact, but there has been an issue with, and we're all using the newfangled terms, launch angle. There's been a lot of hard hit balls, but into the ground. What is your assessment of A, his offensive play, and then and B, maybe throw a thought in on his conversion to first base so far?
You know, Vladdy, I think if we could just go back a little bit in time to when, you know, there was public outcry that we were keeping him down in the minor leagues, and, you know, the consistent conversation from Ross and our baseball operations staff was that he's, you know, he was 19 years old, 20 years old, and development still to be completed. And the danger of bringing a player that fast and that young to the major league level is that you're going to experience both a transition and have to accomplish some development at the major league level. So we've seen a league adjust to him. We've seen him have to adjust his routines, both from everything, from conditioning, from hitting, from game-to-game batting adjustments at the major league level, which is the toughest place to make the adjustment. Because for most players, for mortal players. They're just trying to survive at the major league level. Yeah, we still see the unbelievable level of talent. We see the really positive energy and attitude, and the fact that he's a good teammate. I mean, even last night you watch him, and he's out there pulling so hard for every guy, despite a game that was very mixed for him. So I still feel, you know, he's going to be an elite offensive talent. I think what you're seeing is a transition to the major league level that is different for every single player, and adjustments that have to be made, a career of adjustments, frankly. Whereas at the minor league level, he was so more talented than every other player that talent alone could often lead to elite performance. So I think, Scott, what you're seeing is just a player that is going through that transition, that is learning to make adjustments that he did not have to make at the minor league level, and that there's going to be some growing pains associated with that.
Would you say the same thing, maybe for different reasons, with Nate Pearson? I mean, we've seen him.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. That's ridiculous. The guy's had less than 125 innings at the minor league level. What he's going through is 100% natural. I was frankly shocked to kind of hear the level of discourse on him after his second start, you know, when there was some mixed comments on that. I mean, you have to expect when a guy had less than 125 innings and only three AAA starts that there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, not some, a lot. And that we are, while he is unbelievably talented, while his work ethic is elite, while his routines are at the very top, to try to simulate a season of AAA baseball, to try to, you know, think that he was just going to come up here and dominate at the major league level, that's just uninformed. I mean, almost no one in the history of the game does that. So again, the one piece of that is similar, Scott, is that yes, we're developing a player at the major league level for two reasons. One, because we don't have another place to develop him. And two, because his talent and raw ability certainly predicates and kind of gives us reason to believe he's going to be extremely successful here over time. But, you know, again, looking back at his track record, less than 125 innings, only three AAA starts, you can expect, you know, some ups and downs. What we'd like to see over the, you know, the shortened season is that we're able to kind of provide a foundation that gives him a strong reason to believe that going forward, he's going to be prepared to be a successful major league pitcher. And I would still believe that athleticism, work ethic, discipline, raw ability, you know, all those things are there. Every reason to believe he's going to be a very good major league pitcher for a long time, as long as he stays healthy.
Oh, right. And then I was referring to the quick adjustment that you make to the big leagues. I mean, the fact that it's all coming at these guys quickly. I don't think anybody's thrown in the towel on Nate Pearson. Not at all.
Yeah, I know that. I think just the expectations have been a little unrealistic, that even when I listen to just comments and, you know, you have to expect extreme ups and downs. I mean, he is learning on the mound. Again, go back to kind of think about what 123 innings is of minor league experience, and then to be at the major league level with a level of information and game planning that goes in. There's no surprises when a major league hitter steps in the box, you know, with Nate's arsenal right now. They know exactly what to expect. They've watched hours of video and seen hours of breakdown on him. So that's going to require him to game plan and him to make adjustments at a level that he hasn't done before. So still extremely excited about him. I mean, when you look at kind of his transition along with what we've seen from Borucki and Kay and Hatch, I all of a sudden feel like, okay, we've got a good core of young pitchers with Moore coming and Manoah and Klopfenstein and, you know, Simeon Woods Richardson. And there's just such good things. It's all starting to line up now. It's just, it does never happens quite at the pace that you want it to, but there's really good things happening.
And just last one for you, ahead of the August 31st trade deadline, more league wide. Do you anticipate a normal trade deadline experience, more activity, less activity? How would you handicap that?
I don't know. I mean, nothing's normal. And I think the one reminder I've got is never know what to expect. I would think that, you know, there would be kind of two varieties of trades, one that are kind of, you know, built upon guys who are, you know, in the last year of their deal and just, you know, teams that don't feel like they've got, you know, the greatest chance to go deep into the playoffs and kind of want to try to get a prospect or player But I don't think that people are going to be giving up a lot of talent for short-term trades this year. So I think that the bigger trades and the harder ones to construct are going to be on multi-year talents and multi-year outlooks. And I don't know how common they're going to be. The other reality is it's going to be hard for anybody to say they're out of it this year. So throwing in the towel is going to be a challenging and difficult thing to do. So I guess I would say, like everything else in the world we're dealing in, there's a lot of uncertainty, and we'll have to kind of just wait and see how that plays out.
Appreciate your time this morning, Mark. We'll talk again very soon, I hope.
Okay, good to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Mark Shapiro, the president and CEO of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Yeah, you usually have 100 games to kind of decide. Now you got 35, and then you're going 10 teams to 16 in the playoffs. It's got to change the landscape.
Fired up a little bit about Nate Pearson.
Yeah, I think he thought you were questioning him, but I understood what you were saying.
No, I'm saying no. The question was very simply, and I tried to reword it off the back end. Was no. This is an adjustment for Nate too. Like, it's,
yeah, this, I'm not calling
on Nate Pearson to file his retirement papers. at least not yet. Yeah. Hopefully, we're getting back to him in 17 or 18 years on that. If everything goes well. All right, we'll get Hugh into studio. Who the hell is playing and when? Our daily segment at this time. And at the top of the 8 o'clock hour, are you buying it? Ziggy and I will replay some of Kyle Dubas's, Mitch Marner's, Austin Matthews, Brendan Shanahan's, Freddie Anderson's clips from yesterday, the goodbye, the locker room cleanout, the Zoom chats from yesterday. Are we buying those comments? It's all ahead. High energy with Bourne and Stewie at 8:30. Are you buying it? Bunch of Leafs clips coming up at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. We'll replay them and ask ourselves, are we buying it? Hugh's here with who the hell is playing and when. And you got to rip through it, Hugh. Talk really quickly.
All right. We're talking really quickly. Let's have the really quick saxophone music, please, Andrew. Thank you very much. Four games on the NHL playoff schedule today. All of them on Sportsnet at 3 o'clock. It's the Blue Jackets and Lightning fully rested from that five overtime odyssey the other night. Lightning up 1-0 in that series. 3 o'clock on Sportsnet at 5:30. It's the Vegas Golden Knights trying to go 2-0 on the Blackhawks on Sportsnet 1 and Sportsnet 360. Then at 8 o'clock, Carolina and Boston. Of course, the Bruins won yesterday in overtime. They're going to try to go up 2-0 today. That game on Sportsnet and CBC, 8 o'clock. And then at 10:30, we finish it off with Calgary and Dallas. The Flames looking to take a 2-0 lead there. Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and CBC. No Blue Jays today. They are off. Take on the Rays tomorrow. That's it, Colonel Mustard.
With the candlestick.
In the fridge.
In the Colonel Mustard. I just picked up on that now. I'm never going to live this mustard thing down. Okay, if you just joined the show, if you just tuned in, I went to put some mustard on my sliders that I made last night, and the expiry date was November the 29th of 2012. And he still
used it.
Yeah, that's gross.
At least it
was late 2012.
I didn't use it, but what I did do was I put it back in the fridge to deal with it later.
That's the funniest part right there.
Isn't 2012, isn't that a good year, though? Wasn't that the good vintage?
It was good vintage for the mustard, yeah, for the French's mustard, yes.
Like fine wine. Like fine wine. French's mustard ages.
Hashtag. Oh.
Clumpy.
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 Just give it an extra shake. It's fine.
Are you buying it? It's the name of a new game. We'll play it next. High energy, this is what they want to be called. Bourne and Stewie, Hockey Central at 8:30, coming up. The high energy tag team. Self-appointed name by Anthony Stewart.
Are they going to dress up?
They got to dress up. Do you remember High Energy?
Yeah.
Ziggy, Hugh, either of you?
Did Coco Beware, he's the guy who wore the parrot on his shoulder, correct?
He didn't wear it. It was a real parrot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real parrot.
His name was Frankie.
Frankie the parrot. Of course it was.
Frankie was, he was the
bird. That's my name now, right? Am I Frankie now?
Why? What?
I thought my face was on the parrot in one of the.
Yes. Right. I see. Yes. In the social media. Yes. The tweet.
Ugliest parrot ever. By the way.
Yeah. Ziggy. I mean, you're the bird man, brother. So Stewie and Bourne will be ahead. Yeah. They should dress up like High Energy, the baggy jacket and pants like the, that was classic stuff. We're looking forward to getting the guys on and we'll talk Leafs, but obviously break down some of what went on last night and just help me through the emotional state of not hating the Vancouver Canucks. Adjustments and change in life is hard, and admitting that you like something that you just have consciously hated for a long time, which has been my relationship with the Vancouver Canucks, is a difficult thing to push through. So maybe Stewie and Bourne can help me with that. This game is called Are You Buying It? So the Leafs held their Zoom locker room cleanout yesterday. Their appropriately physically distanced goodbyes. How briefly we knew ye. I mean, they came back 2 or 3 weeks ago and now it's all gone again. And the postmortem was, as you would expect, there were some guys who used the term embarrassing. Mitch Marner, I think, opened himself up to misinterpretation, saying that he wasn't engaged in game one. Kyle Dubas got irritated at times, defensive at times, and at other times was quite frank. We're going to run through some clips, and the question here, boys, is, are you buying it? Clip number one, Kyle Dubas talking about the criticism Mitch Marner faces in this market.
What kind of player do you want Mitch Marner to become next season?
It's what kind of player do we want Mitch to become? Just what he is now. I don't get the criticism of Mitch Marner one bit. I really struggle with it. He's a guy that plays his ass off every night. He's got tremendous skill, tremendous intensity. Plays every situation for us, makes a ton of plays, and everything that he does wrong, people jump all over him about. I don't know how or why it's that way, but I don't know where this all started with the criticizing of Mitch Marner. But to me, it's among the most idiotic things that I see done here.
Now, Marner was not going to play 82 games in a normal season because he missed some time with injury. So he played 59 games, had 67 points. If you prorate 67 points in 59 games over a full season, he would have scored 93 points this year. Well, he had 94 points in a full 82 games last season. So from a points per game perspective, Mitch Marner is effectively in the same spot. Are you buying Kyle Dubas's defiance over the criticisms of Mitch Marner's play? Ziggy.
I am buying what Kyle Dubas is saying. I about how he feels about him as a player, where he sees his game going. This isn't something where he's just trying to, you know, buy the player some time to find his game or to fulfill his potential. I really do think that Leafs management loves Marner, loves what he brings to the team, and I'm on board with Dubas though. You know how I feel about Marner. I don't think it was his best series against Columbus. I thought he was getting better every day, but I'm on board with what Dubas had to say, and I'm buying what he said.
Hugh, I'm not buying what Kyle Dubas had to say because Kyle Dubas knows why. Mitch Marner. He doesn't have to agree with it, but he knows why Mitch Marner is being criticized. And I'm not here to debate whether it's fair or unfair, but Mitch Marner went from rookie contract, 90-point guy, to one of the most expensive contracts in the National Hockey League, 90-point guy. He's an offensive dynamo, but people are going to nitpick. And all of these guys in the Big Four, they're rich now. They've gone from the baby-faced kids, now not Mitch, but the rest can grow full beards now if they want to. They've gone from the baby-faced kids who were lifting the Leafs out of a decade of playoff darkness to the core of a team that is expected to not just contend, but win a Stanley Cup. And in a capped league, you can't separate player performance from salary. You're just not able to do it, because if your high-paid guys don't get it done, the team isn't going to succeed.
I'm not buying it either for a lot of those very same reasons. Kyle Dubas has been in this market long enough now. He understands the visceral reaction that this fan base has to its team, whether it be good or whether it be bad. There's no way that Kyle Dubas can't wrap his head around why people would be upset about the play of Mitch Marner. There's absolutely no way. That's disingenuous in my opinion. I am not buying it.
Here's what you accept when you take a job in a front office of the Toronto Maple Leafs, or you end up playing for the Toronto Maple Leafs. With the attention you get in this city, they will build statues, and you will be immortalized if you win a Stanley Cup. But when things don't go well, you get questioned. There's a heavy spotlight and a focus on you, and you can't have it both ways. You can't be honored and revered when it's good, and you won't go ignored when it's bad. It just does not, work both ways, and nor should it. How about the core of this team, Kyle?
The core has changed over 4 years, so I would love for the progress to be linear. And I'd love for every year, you know, we win one round, then we win two, then we win three, then we win the Stanley Cup. I'd love for us to win the Stanley Cup 2 years ago and then win it every year. But I think in life and in athletics and in business, unfortunately, progress is never really follows the straight line that you want it to.
Okay, so there's a couple of things he says here. And Hugh, we'll start with you. He talks about progress not always being linear. That's one thought. The second thought is what he originally said, which is the core of this team has, in fact, changed over the last 4 years. And yet I look at it, and he said 4 years. Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares has been added in the last couple of years, so that's the one outlier. But Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Riley Anderson have all been here for the last 4 years.
I'm buying that. I'm buying that he believes that the core is still intact and it still has, you know, a mission to accomplish. So I don't have an issue with that. Whether success is linear or not, I don't know. That's debatable. That's team to team. It's hard to quantify that. It's hard to say we're going to improve 10% this year, 10% next year. So that part, not really buying, but I am buying the fact that he likes his core. And we'll look for better things in the future from it.
I'm buying it, Scotty Hugh. I agree with a lot of what he said. It's tough when it looks like you take a step back when, in fact, you need to take that step back before you do improve. And that happens in not just sports, but in life. The team is... It has changed. I mean, Tavares coming in, giving him the captain, that's the core of the team has, you know, it has changed where it's not the same, you know, the Nylander, Marner, Matthews, they're not on the entry level young kids coming in and playing. Now they are the core. So I don't know we can debate this forever on where you saw Nylander, Marner, Matthews on their entry level. Were they the core of the team? It's tough because they're just young kids coming in. There was no pressure. Now all of a sudden they are the core and the pressure is on. So that's why I think it has changed. And then you throw Tavares in there and you give him the C. So I'm buying a lot of what of that comment, what he said about the team in general and how they have to improve and where they go from here.
This was an interesting take from Kyle Dubas on Cody Ceci.
I thought, you know, I know Cody is much maligned at times, you know, he certainly doesn't have the same level of puck skill as a lot of the others, but I think he's a player that as we continue in hockey and tracking different players and what their contributions are defensively, that he'll be a player that's looked at much differently as those different things become much more public, not unlike they have in baseball or basketball with the defensive value of different players and their impact on the game. So, you know, I was happy with Cody as well.
Do we read into that comment that they may be considering bringing Cody Ceci back? If the money is right, are you buying it?
Not bringing him back. This is, you don't want to start cutting up a guy, especially if you're getting rid of him. I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? Go and just demolish the guy in the year in presser? So I guess I'm not buying what he's saying about Ceci, but he is defending the fact, their metrics and how they evaluate players, because they obviously do it a lot differently than most teams, because that evaluation of Cody Ceci, I would love to see. I think he's had a bit of a tough year. And if, you know, the metrics are different on that, I'd love to see them. So in a way, I'm not really buying what he's saying, but I do agree that they were high on Ceci this year.
I'm actually buying it. I think that the Dubas is buying into these advanced team metrics. I'm just looking at some of the stats here. Cody Ceci's minus 49 in the 2 years before he came to Toronto. He's plus 7. I know it's not a complete season, but he's plus 7 this year. So I do think that they see something in him that maybe fans don't. Whether that's good or whether that's bad, we'll find out come contract.
And you may open yourself up to getting crushed on Twitter for the plus minus comment. And remember, the Senators were dreadful, right? You know, so you're naturally going to be on the ice for a lot more goals against than four in Ottawa. I do think that they move on from Cody Ceci, and it is incumbent. You're trying to maintain relationships with less so maybe players, more so agents around the league. You're not looking to step on a guy's throat as he heads out the door. Mitch Marner, not happy with the Leafs' lack of success against Columbus, and he made this comment about how things may track.
And we're not happy to be sitting here and doing media and, you know, going home for the rest of the summer. So no one's happy about that. Everyone wishes we're still in that bubble playing hockey. And our stuff happens. Obviously one of the hardest trophies, if not the hardest trophy to win, and you see it, you know, it's been a lot of teams that have a lot of great teams that a lot of great players on teams that took them a couple of years to figure stuff out. And obviously that seems like kind of what we're going through right now, and something we got to get over that hump.
Might take the Leafs years is my interpretation of Mitch Marner's comments. Well, it has taken a few years. Patience in Toronto. And I mean, we're getting texts here right now. I don't get why Marner's being vilified. You know why there are, you know why teams in smaller markets outperform the Maple Leafs? It's because Toronto is nuts. Okay. Well, last I checked, Boston is a crazy ass baseball town.
Mm-hmm. New York. Yeah.
The New York Yankees have what, 27, 28? World Series championships. Yep. The Boston Red Sox nixed the so-called curse in 04, won again in 07 and in 13.
How about the Lakers and Dodgers?
Like, I mean, honestly, it's got nothing to do with that. And if you can't take the heat, you get out of the kitchen. You can go play in a smaller market when you hit free agency. Guys have chosen that. Jake Gardner more recently did. He turned down more money in a place like Montreal to go to play in Carolina. I understand that. Learning how to win by losing. The question for the fan, Ziggy, is how much more early exits, how much more losing will have to occur before they learn how to win?
And I like the fact that he, you know, I don't like the fact that he brought it up, but I do agree with the, it's going to take, it takes time. It's how you're losing, what kind of progress are you making? Then I'm okay with that, taking that angle on. Yeah, it took some of the best players years to win a cup. Yzerman, Ovechkin, right? So I don't like players talking about it. Like, I don't want the Leafs saying, well, it took Ovechkin 9 years. It took Yzerman 13 years. Like, I'd rather them not talk about it. But, you know, I am buying what he said with where the team is at right now. And, yeah, I just – his whole comments around being engaged and the work ethic – That can be concerning, but I understand where he's coming from.
Not buying it for a second. When he talks about, you know, this could take years. I think, first of all, Mitch should have used a different word than not engaged for game one. He could have just said something as simple as, I just couldn't get it going until later in the series. And I think everybody would have been okay with that. I think they're losing track here. I'm not so sure Leaf fans are upset that their team didn't win the Stanley Cup this year. I don't think they're upset about that. I think they're upset because they went out in the first round, or sorry, one and done again for the fourth straight year.
It's bigger than that, Hugh.
They just want their team to win a damn playoff series.
Well, no, but it's bigger than that. And conveniently, COVID happened and 4.5 months passed by in a sometimes very slowly and other times in a blink of an eye. They were inconsistent all season long.
Sure.
And the 5-game series against Columbus reflected the bigger sample size. I mean, the goalposts keep moving with certain people wanting to make excuses for this hockey team. Well, why are you so focused on the defense when goal scoring was the issue, either because Korpisalo or Merzlikins was red hot or they hit a couple of goalposts? Why is everybody focused on the defense when they more or less did a pretty good job of shutting down the Columbus Blue Jackets at most points of that series? Yeah, except they were a bottom 10 team over a much larger sample in the regular season.
Yeah.
Goals against, bottom 10. Well, they score enough goals and we got to focus more on the offense because of the 5-game series, they didn't score enough goals. Well, they scored more than enough goals in the regular season.
Yeah.
In a larger sample size. So the goalposts keep moving and the people moving those goalposts are the people who just want to wear the blue colored glasses. We're going to say rose colored glasses. The blue colored glasses.
I hear you. Yeah.
If you're okay from start October to finish the other night, with the season that was, good for you. I'm not. And we should expect more.
Yes.
We should expect more. It's okay to have expectations.
Yeah.
It's okay to have expectations for yourself in your own life. It's okay to have expectations for your favorite hockey team, your favorite sports franchise.
Yeah.
That is allowed. And sometimes it's not hot takery. I mean, my eyes didn't deceive me. I know what I watched. Freddie Anderson to put a bow on this.
With tighter games, closer games, being comfortable with that, I think it's going to have a great benefit, especially in the playoffs. And I think if we can get used to doing that in the season and not expecting to blow teams out or only really like show up when it's like a really big game in the regular season, I think if we can have it more become an everyday thing and really get used to playing like that, I think that's going to benefit us in the long run.
That is the most to-the-point and important comment that anybody made yesterday.
Yep.
Frederik Andersen. He just said it all right there, but he sandpapered the rough edges, as he often does. He called his team out for like the third or fourth time this season.
Basically insinuating that when it's, and Ziggy talked about this earlier in the show, that when they're running up the score against a team that's maybe not that great in the middle of the season, everything is great, but when they have to play the tough defensive style of game, it goes away from them. So he's Freddie Anderson is saying this team needs to be tougher defensively. And again, it has nothing to do with fighting.
I wonder if Frederik Andersen deep down in his core, in his gut, in his mind, thinks if I'm going to win a Stanley Cup, I've got to end up on a team that is just more committed to playing in its own end.
Yeah. At times,
he's never going to vouch for that.
And that's the frustrating thing about this team. At times, they show that they can play that way. And then it just, from one game to another, it just seems to go away from them. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I like the fact that he spoke and he didn't really call the guys out, but he brought up the issues that ail this team, and I don't think a lot of guys are willing to say that. He said it in a little bit nicer than he probably wanted to. Maybe that's what they need. They need somebody to come out and say what Freddie just said in not so nice a way and really ruffle feathers in the room and get guys on edge. Some of the best teams I played on, that happened. Like, no one cared about each other's feelings or how they said it. It got said. It got said in the rawest form. And guys either changed the way they played and got better, or you were left behind. That was kind of what makes championship teams great and what makes teams win. It's that you hold guys accountable, and that's what Freddie Anderson did.
We will replay that Frederick Anderson clip for Bourne and Stewie, and we'll get into Kyle Dubas's comments. Rod Brind'Amour fined 25 GERS after his team got screwed on a second period Charlie Coyle goal in game one against Boston yesterday. We'll get into that with the boys. Vancouver, are they for real against St. Louis? They certainly looked it last night. Bourne and Stewie, high energy, next. Morning, Stewie, high energy, and Frankie, the parrot.
Frankie, the pigeon.
The pigeon. Good morning, boys. What's up?
Morning, fellas.
Good morning.
Morning.
Are you ready to talk Maple Leafs Zoom locker cleanout day?
Thrilling. Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. Okay, here we go. I thought, out of everything that got said yesterday, what Frederick Anderson brought up was probably the most to-the-point comment of anything.
With tighter games, closer games, being comfortable with that, I think it's going to have a great benefit, especially in the playoffs. And I think if we can get used to doing that in the season and not expecting to blow teams out or only really like show up when it's like a really big game in the regular season. I think if we can have it more become an everyday thing and really get used to playing like that, I think that's going to benefit us in the long run.
You remember, guys, after that game in Philly where it was close until about 2 or 3 minutes left in the third period, and then the Leafs just coughed up a handful of goals and it ended up on the scoreboard being a blowout. Freddie called his team out. It was back in November. This has happened 2 or 3 times. It happened again yesterday. You can hear the frustration in Freddie's voice. He clearly doesn't think this team buys in consistently enough. That's my interpretation. Where do you come down on what Freddie had to say, Stewie, and then Justin, pick it up?
Well, he's 100% correct. And that's the one player that told us exactly how it is after a bad season. And they did not play good defensively at all. And people tend to forget how many games this season the count was at 10 or 12 where they let in a goal in the first minute of the game or the last minute of the period or shorthanded. So in the National Hockey League, you have to be able to play defense. You could be the Russian Rocky. You could be Ovi and score 97 goals a year. But when it comes down to clamp down and play team defense, you have to do that. You have to do that any way you put it. And people are trying to run Freddie out of town. You run Freddie out of town, you're going to spend time years and years and years saying, oh, man, we wish we had Freddie Anderson back. This was not on him. This was not on him. This is on the team as a whole, not playing proper team defense, not really stepping up when key moments, on the key power plays. So that's on a lot of different guys. That's not on a Freddie Anderson.
No, that's true. The one theme I picked up throughout the interviews, and not just with Freddie, was just that this is more than a playoff failure. This is a failure during the regular season to consistently be a good team that puts forth the type of effort you know they can put forth. Because if they do that consistently, they're not going to finish with 95 points and draw the Bruins in the first round. You know, it's been Washington who was very good. I think the President's Trophy winner 4 years ago, two very good Bruins teams, and now Columbus, who had the same amount of points as them. Like, if you actually do good in the regular season, you don't have to play a tough team in the first round. And not that this is about Columbus being good. But the point is, if they can have that consistent effort, they can have draw an easier first-round opponent, then all of a sudden everyone goes, boy, that team has sure learned from experience, and they're, you know, much better team now in the playoffs. They've learned how to win. And that won't be the case. The case will just be, if this team does it consistently in the regular season, they'll draw easier opponents, and all of a sudden it'll look like they're able to buckle down in the playoffs.
Once the season is over, though, you're going to evaluate the team as a whole, right? Do we have the Shanahan comments? We took a step back, Scotty, or
because yeah, that's kind of one. I'll cue
if we have it, but I have one thing to say about it. That for me is the big thing: is are we getting better? Because I'm only one team can win. We all forget that there's one winner. That's it.
Okay, but the metric isn't necessarily the Stanley Cup, right?
I understand that, but everybody wants. So that's what I'm trying to say: is everybody wants some kind of improvement. For me, this is a little bit of a step back, where and it's not the loss to Columbus. That's what everyone's confusing the comments with, and when you're evaluating this, is we lost to the lowly Columbus Blue Jackets with no big stars and two goaltenders that aren't a number one. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the start, the middle of the season, the way it stopped before the pandemic, and the playoffs. And do we have the Shanahan comment?
We do. Here's Brendan Shanahan yesterday.
I think that we certainly in some ways have taken a step back, but you know, in spite of that, we think that there's an opportunity to take more steps forward. I have complete faith in Kyle as a general manager, in Sheldon as a coach, and complete confidence in what we're going to do here in Toronto.
Yeah, Justin, I'll start with you, but what do you think that there's something in Shanahan back of his mind where it's like, all right, he better change the way his thoughts on how to put a team together, because whatever's happened so far is not working, but obviously still early. It's only been a couple years.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, is it has only been a couple of years, and the core has been young through those years. And I know no one likes that answer, but I think, and I said this yesterday on Hockey Central, that this is a management staff that believes that there is something here that is close. You know, they taking the Bruins to game 7 twice and then Columbus to 5, and, you know, with a young core. I think they believe that group has a step forward to take just in terms of age and maturity being a big word there. Off the ice and with effort and consistency. And then I think if you have a team that isn't as injured as they were this year, you're probably looking at a team that's well over 100 points in the regular season. What I'm getting at is I think they think that they are not that far off, and if they run it back with something pretty close to what they have, things will look a lot rosier next year. So I mean, as much as everyone right now is like, they got to get tougher and heavier and more physical, I think they see a team that's really close, and I think they think that they can just have some better luck. They'll get better results.
Well, I think that the goalposts have been moved, especially by you, Ziggy, because we were talking about Stanley Cup or bust at the beginning of the season. So I remember when we were talking about that. So now I think everyone's sort of letting them off the hook. But with me, I'm a solutions guy, and I focus on the solution. But I think with the Toronto Maple Leafs, the solution is the problem. Their solution is, well, you know what? We're going to go to the Russian well now. We're going to go bring in the KHL guy, the top KHL defenseman. I play in the KHL. Guys can run numbers 1 year and then be crap the other. They're coming in, they're bringing in a forward from Russia, and they have Nick Robertson coming off. So this team needs to get bigger. They need to get tougher. They need to get more truculent, as Berkey says. And it's going to be more of the same next year. And I'll tell you, the success rate for Canadians going over to the KHL is about 50%. And I think it's the same way coming back. And that's true with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because 2 years ago, we were running Ozganov and Zaitsev out of town. So for them to say, well, you know, the solution is we got some KHL All-Stars coming in. Unless it's Danny Heatley All-Star, I don't think it's going to be that much of a difference.
Stewie, how close is a team that, with one exception in the Babcock era, has consistently finished in the bottom 10 in goals against each regular season? I mean, I don't understand how you're step away when you're giving up as many goals as this team does. I know they score a lot, but they also give up a ton, and that's a problem.
But that's the thing, and Ziggy knows, you know, you have to be able to play team defense. And the best analogy that I say is, you could be at the Olympics, right? And you could be your specialty, your offense, your specialty could be the pommel horse, it could be the uneven bars, it could be the floor routine. But everyone at the Olympic level knows how to do a backflip. So everybody on this Toronto Maple Leaf team, whether they're offensive stars or not, knows how to play good team defense. You know how to protect the lead. You know how to not get scored on off the puck drop. You know how to kill penalties. You know how to block shot. You know how to do every one of those details. But now it's that buy-in factor as a whole. Again, I don't need Austin Matthews to be winning a Selke trophy. He's a Rocker Richard every single year. But everybody else sort of has to step in, and you have to find a way to harness your strengths and protect your weaknesses. That's what National Hockey League Stanley Cup contending teams do on a regular basis.
Yeah, for me, the defense... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Justin.
Go ahead, Ziggy, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I just want to touch up the Stewie's comments there. Yeah, for me, defense is... I believe most guys can play defense, and the guys that don't can get taught, but everybody knows when you come back and become a better defensive player, it's more difficult to be offensive, right? That's the problem at the end of the day.
Group, yeah. I just feel like with that core, what you hear about them right now, and I almost feel for these guys because everything you need, you know, a team that's more competitive, harder, you know, more physical, whatever. It's like those guys are not. That's not how they play, the core of this Toronto Maple Leafs team. So, to me, when you're talking like that, you should be talking about the roster construction and Kyle Dubas and not those individuals, because Mitch Marner's not going to become harder to play against. You know, Willie Nylander's not going to become some grinded-out Patrice Bergeron 30-plus goal-scorer type player. Those guys are what they are, and they're very good and very effective. If you have a problem with this team and not being physical and defensive enough, to me, that comes with roster construction and not looking at the core guys and saying, well, Willie's got to play better D. You know what you've got in Willie, and that ain't changing. At this point, I think it's got to come from other places in the roster.
Bourne and Stewie with us. This is the high-energy Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday on leadoff. Okay, so second period, Charlie Coyle scores for Boston yesterday. There was a hand pass involved that was apparently negated by the fact that Peter Mrazek smothered the puck, except that the Bruins crashed the net, freed the puck. It got to Coyle, and he put it home. And Rod Brind'Amour is $25,000 poorer, although I have no doubt that Tom Dundon, his owner, was more than happy to pony up to cover that fine.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. He's $25,000 poorer for essentially saying this is why the league is a joke. Here's the thing, guys. We can nitpick about what it was that Rod Brind'Amour challenged, and we can nitpick about what it is that you can and can't have reviewed. How about the National Hockey League just take stock of 10 to 15 seconds of footage and say, is this a goal or is this not a goal? We have a hand pass. We have a goalie who subsequently appears to smother the puck. This isn't a goal. This isn't a goal. How about they just review the entire play in general instead of getting pedantic, and the National Football League is just as guilty of this, getting pedantic, and it ends up in the back of Carolina's net, and they are the ones who pay the price. It was not a goal. It should not have been a goal.
Well, Scotty Mack, right. I know you're a baseball guy, and I think I've heard you over the years or over this year complain about the length of the baseball games. And if we're now stopping this game now, you know, 2-3 times a period to do video review, I know the technology's there where you can do it fairly quickly. We're going to be having
you know, Tampa Bay, Columbus, overtime games, that length without the overtime. We can't nitpick every single little part of the game.
But that's a big, but like Stewie, players, that's a
like
big
the players,
play.
The refs have been off. The refs have been off for 4.5 months as well. They're going to miss some things. And I guarantee you right now, as mad as Brendan Moore was, he's doing that for semantics. He's doing that for theatrics now, for have the refs to really zone in going into next game to get a call or two. That's what that was.
Okay, but that's not a nitpick.
Yeah, that's a big one. And to Brendan Moore's credit, his point was just tell me what the call is, right? Because he was saying that the ref came to him and said, either the goalie covered it up and it shouldn't have been a goal, or it was a hand pass. You pick one, is what the guy said to Brendan Moore. And Brendan Moore said, you tell me which one it is. Because if you're saying that the goalie covered it up, then it's goalie interference and we should be on the power play. You know, that's a pretty big swing in the game. So I've got no problem with Brendan Moore being upset about that. And in fact, it's a little annoying hearing the league, ding him so hard for what I think is a pretty valid criticism. In general, though, I am a supporter of video review, but I think there needs to be a way that we can just speed this up. Like, if I can watch the replay at home on my television 7 seconds after it happened, can we not get these guys like an iPad, a screen in their pocket they can pull out and give a couple extra quick looks and go from there? Like, I don't need the 3-minute review, but let's give them a couple more glances before they have to make the call.
I don't know how that was called a goal, guys. If I was behind the bench, I probably would have broken a stick or two. He has every right. You have a hand pat, guy moves the puck with his hand towards the goaltender. Either it's covered and the play's dead, or he doesn't have control of it and the play has to be called. Because it's a hand pass. Like,
correct.
What is happening in the NHL? And when they go to the video replay, you should just – how hard is it to watch the last 15 seconds before the puck goes in? Was there any issue with this puck going in? Now that I've had a second look at it, done. And no more going to the penalty box and headsets on. Like, get over there, have everything set up with the video, your iPads, whatever, and make the decision on a couple looks. I don't think it's that difficult.
All right, boys, we'll leave it there. We'll leave it there just because we're right up against the clock. Thanks for this. High energy. Owen, Coco, Frankie. It was fantastic. We'll do it again next week. Justin Bourne, Anthony Stewart. High energy. Hockey Central at 8:30 on a Thursday. We'll jump. Get Hugh to jump into studio. We'll get you set for good show next. Coming up on Good Show, a little before 12 noon, Dan Shulman among the guests on Writer's Block this afternoon. Ooh, just an exhale.
Well, we covered a lot of ground today.
A little worked up. And all of it, I think the worst thing that I had to admit this morning, aside from the 7.5-year-old mustard that was sitting in my fridge last night, that's disgraceful, yeah. I acknowledge that, was the fact that I don't hate the Vancouver Canucks anymore.
Yeah, that's probably more worrisome comment.
That's tough. Tough for me.
Yeah.
As a Seattle Kraken guy?
Long time.
First time, long time. long time fan. Day oneer. This Canucks team is worth investing some energy in.
Well, when they play the Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh, God.
In the Western Final. I don't even know if they can. Maybe, hopefully. We'll see. Vegas is going to win it all. They're really...
Yeah, they are really a really good team. Yeah. They are a really good team.
And Robin Leonard's their goaltender now.
They're fun to watch.
Yeah.
I'm still puzzled by the coaching change, but
yeah, that was a little strange.
I love the guys they target. That is a 3-line, a 9-forward, top 9 team.
Yep. And now they're winning with Robin Leonard.
And like Pete DeBoer going behind the bench in Vegas, considering he was the Sharks coach last year in Game 7 of that playoff series. That's like Hulk Hogan going from red and yellow to black and white.
I knew there had to be a wrestling analogy.
Heel turn. Well, we just came off of high energy. That's what it is. Pete DeBoer behind the Vegas bench. Well, we will have Elliot Friedman at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, as we always do. On a Friday, like I said, Dana White coming up on Good Show. It's Thursday. We're inching closer to the weekend. The weather is supposed to be beautiful, 30 degrees and sunny this afternoon. Enjoy it. We're back at 6 o'clock tomorrow.
Isn't 2012, isn't that a good year, though? Wasn't that the good vintage?
It was good vintage for the mustard. Yeah, for the French's mustard. Yes.
Like fine wine.
Just give it an extra shake. It's fine.